Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Snap quiz. Ready? Name the state park closest to you. Okay, that was easy. And today we're heading to a bunch of state parks across America to get a sense of what's happening in our natural world as spring launches across America when your Voice of the Earth continues here on the Wild Side News. One of our greatest gifts that we too often take for granted are our state parks. Did you know that there are over 5,000 state parks across America, with over 12 million acres of land? Many of these parks contain some of the finest natural areas open to you and are often staffed with rangers and naturalists who know a lot about what's happening in their parks. I believe in state parks. I started my career as a naturalist in a state park, and I know the joys of working with the public as they come to relax, hike, overnight, and just have fun. Right now, state parks across America are all experiencing spring in their own ways. Today, we visit five state parks to see how spring is launching across America. It's great to get a sense of how big and diverse this land really is, and how nature finds its own unique expression and balance in each unique place. Today, we celebrate spring across America. We begin our journey by heading out into the wildlands of Montana to see what spring brings in Big Sky Country. Spring is in the air, and we're taking some time today to travel across the country and visit a lot of our state parks. We've certainly spent a lot of time on the Wild Side News covering the national parks, talking to a lot of the interpreters and chiefs of interpretation and park managers. But for every national park, I don't know what the number is, but there must be at least 20 state parks out there. This is an opportunity for you to hear what's happening across the nation and what's happening in state parks, which stretch from Maine to Florida and Washington to California and everywhere in between. So now we're going to head up to Montana and talk with Richard Hopkins, who is the park manager. Richard, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Thank you.
Well, first of all, give us a sense of where Elm Pishkan State Park is in Montana.
Well, Elm Pishkan is just 10 miles west of Great Falls on the road to Helena. We're the largest buffalo jump in North America, and our park is about 2,000 acres.
Now, what's a buffalo jump?
Buffalo jump is where the first peoples actually ran entire herds of buffalo off of a cliff. The cliff is over a mile long at our park, and it was used from 900 to 1500. So this is prehistory. Everyone that came to the park and used it walked here, so this was prior to the horse.
Very interesting. I've certainly with that feature, but I never knew of them as buffalo jumps. That's a term that's probably been around for a while, but slipped by me. Now, are you a mountain park, or are you more in the lowlands?
We're actually close to the mountains, but we're still on the plains. We're almost where the plains meet the mountains.
Gotcha. That's going to be a beautiful landscape up there, then.
Yes, it's at our park. You can see to the Rocky Mountain front, to the west, and then to the south, you look to the Big Belts. To the east, you see the Little Belts, and then the Highwood Mountains is another range, and so they've all got snow on them right now, and it is beautiful.
How long have you been with the park?
I've been here about 2.5 years.
Uh-huh. And now state parks is different than national parks. National parks, you'll find people moving around to different parks. Has this been your career?
No, sir. Actually, I retired from the federal government, the Bureau of Land Management in Great Falls, and I'd worked a lot with the tribes because our state park is a sacred site for the tribes of Montana and Idaho. They still come here and perform ceremonies. We encourage that because it is their sacred site. So that's one of the reasons why we are a park. We wanted to preserve the site itself because of the large amounts of buffalo bones and history of tribal use here.
Do you have a website for your park?
It's actually come to mt.gov and then parks, and then Om Pishpan.
Well, I encourage people to take a look at that website and find out more about the park. But now we're just going to go a little bit personal, Richard. And I'm curious, because you live at the park or you spend a lot of time at your park, what's happening in terms of the natural elements today?
Well, today we get a lot of wind at the park, so most days are windy, but we're starting to green up here. We've had a lot of rain this past week, over an inch and a half. The grasses are starting to green up, but the flowers that are early have not even started to bloom yet, but we do have wild onion, the wild mustard, and the lupines that are sprouting somewhat, but nothing in bloom yet as far as they're concerned. But we have a large population of migratory birds that come into the area. Our burrowing owls are back. They've been here for the last 4 years, three nesting pairs to raise their young, and they live in the prairie dog town up on top. Our prairie dog town is probably 82 acres in size, so it's a pretty good size prairie dog town. Now, the other things that's happening, the other birds that are coming in, of course, the snowy owls here year-round, and the short-eared owls, strangely enough, actually spent the winter here. That's the first time they've done that. They usually migrate out. And we've got a nesting pair of golden eagles, and it looks like they're working on the nest right now. So it looks like they're going to raise some young this year.
Now, your snowy owls, do they change to their winter coats in your area there?
Yes, they do. The same way with we have the snowshoe hare, same thing. Of course, we have a lot of cottontail rabbits, but the main things, like you say, the snowy owl and the snowshoe hare, they change colors. And it's kind of interesting to see.
Of course, everybody's talking about climate change. Do you sense any sort of change in this particular spring?
Yes, we do, and we think that's why the short-eared owls stayed at the park this year, because normally they migrate out, so that was kind of a surprise to us.
They would head south because the winters were too severe.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Well, that's a worthwhile observation.
Yep. And we have big game animals that are here at the park. We have a herd of antelope that's about 100 in size. We have mule deer. There's probably a herd of two different herds, maybe 17 in total. Bobcat, we have probably two families of bobcat here. We have our yellow-bellied marmots. They're coming out now because of the warm days. The face of the cliff is about 50 feet high that they ran the buffalo off of. All beneath that cliff is denning for your snakes. So we have a lot of rattlesnakes here, plus bull snakes and yellow-bellied racers, and they will probably be out in another week. They're right now, they're just out on warm days like today, sunning at the mouth of the dens and so on.
So that's obviously something that you have to be aware of in the spring. I'm very familiar with that, having spent time in New Mexico. The rattlers will pretty much den up or get under protected areas when it gets cold, but at the moment that it starts to warm up, they're out there sunning, and you have to suddenly start to really pay attention where you're walking.
Yes, you sure do.
Yeah. And I'm curious about the snowy owls and do they overwinter there?
Yes, sir, they do.
And do they stay active, or do they tend to somewhat hibernate?
They stay active because we've got a good population of cottontail rabbit in the park, and they feed on those. We've got a lot of sharp-tailed grouse and Hungarian partridge in the park. They feed on those. The prairie dogs come out on warm days, and they feed on those. So they're here year-round, and we find the bones underneath some of our eaves here at the visitor center of the whatever they had for dinner the night before.
We're talking with Richard Hopkins, who's the park manager at Om. Is it Pishkin?
It's a Blackfoot word that means corral, and it's pronounced Pishkin.
Oh, that's interesting. Then the word itself probably was used in the corralling of the animals.
Yes, and see, that's not even correct, but some of the bloods that come down from Canada that are members of the Blackfoot tribe, they say it's actually pronounced Pishkan. And Pishkan, they say, means deep kettle of blood. And 2 years ago, we found what they describe as the deep kettle of blood eroding out of some of the banks of one of the coulees. And the deep kettle of blood was actually a hole dug into the ground, probably 18 inches and probably 2 feet in diameter, is lined with rocks, and they fill that hole with grass and sticks and buffalo chips when they were using it to fire that to heat those rocks. Then they take a buffalo hide with the blood, the fat, and the bone marrow, and they make a blood pudding.
Hmm.
And that's what they use later to make their pemmican cakes, which was the high protein bar of the day that they were really after.
Hmm. Interesting history. Richard, now of all the reasons to be at a park, Almpishkin Park, what's your favorite?
Well, probably right now just the sound of the meadowlarks. We have an abundance of meadowlarks. People love to come out here and just sit and listen to the meadowlarks. It sounds just like a wildlife tape. They're just beautiful.
The meadowlarks in the spring, you're absolutely, you know, I've been away from the meadowlarks for a while, and as soon as you mentioned that, my whole spirit lifted, because that it's possibly one of the most colorful, strong, vibrant songs. It's just so filled with life.
Yes, and you know, there's a history from the tribes, since this is their sacred site, even though the Sioux didn't use this particular jump, but they were in Montana, that it was the meadowlark that Chief Sitting Bull, he had the talent to communicate with the birds, and in all of their history about Sitting Bull, it was the meadowlark that he communicated with mostly. Meadowlark saved his life at one time, saved him from a grizzly bear, told him to lay still, and he did so and survived.
Well, those are realms that personally I wish I knew a lot more about. I know that I love to communicate with animals, and I respect them as beings myself. Do you expect more snow coming in yet throughout the spring?
Probably a couple of more weeks we could have some more snow, because this is the time of year when you start getting rain showers, and then the temperature drops and into the 31, 32 degrees, and you start getting snow. So we'll still get a wet snow, and it'll last maybe overnight or part of the morning. So, yeah, we'll still have some of that. And one of the other interesting birds that are here in the park, that it has a beautiful sound, and you see most of them on top of the buffalo jump, is the long-billed curlew. If you've never heard a curlew, they make a beautiful sound, too. That's something people come out here just to see and to listen to, because they migrate on through once it dries up a little and the spring rains are gone, then they'll move a little further north.
Now, do you have any open water in your park?
We have three reservoirs is all, and they're man-made dams. But by those, you know, we have the American Avocets, and then, of course, later on, and possibly happening right now, we have the small bats, and there's plenty of those around the park because of the caves and things, because of the cliff. And so you can go out at night and just shine a light on these ponds, and they're just bats all over the place. So it's kind of fun.
How big is your park?
About 2,000 acres.
Uh-huh. And is it primarily a prairie park, or is it mixed?
It's primarily a prairie park. The visitor center, it's in the low spot of the park, and to the top of the jump, we have a hiking trail that's about 3 miles round trip, and you gain about 650 feet in elevation. But otherwise, it's pretty flat.
And can people camp at your park?
No, sir. It's a day-use park only. Because of the scenic vista and the significance of the sacredness of the site, we have pictographs and petroglyphs here, so we do not have camping at this time. We really don't have any place right now where we could accommodate that, and people haven't really been that interested because there are the significant number of rattlesnakes.
Yes, that definitely changes your willingness to spend time, particularly on the ground.
You mentioned what else is happening in the spring here. We have ringneck pheasant. Of course, they're an introduced species, but they are actually mating at this time, so they are doing some of their mating rituals. We have sharp-tailed grouse that do their dancing. We have that going on in the park.
Oh, that's an exciting thing to see.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. And so these opportunities, you know, are here and happening right now.
It sounds, because you're a prairie park, that it's a lot of these birds, therefore, are on the ground as they're passing through, particularly the migrants. And so it must be an extraordinary birding park.
Yes, it is. It's really an excellent place. That we have a lot of Audubon people come out here and just do the bird watching.
Well, Richard Hopkins at Alm Pishkan State Park in Montana, I want to thank you so much, and enjoy the rest of your spring.
Sure, and if, you know, there's 50 other parks in Montana, so, and they range from east to west, so there's a lot of things for people to do in the state parks in Montana.
Our spring tour now continues as we visit the state park that inspired me to become a naturalist. Well, as we continue our journey across the United States, visiting state parks and the naturalists, and learning what's happening literally in all of these areas as spring emerges, I'm really thrilled to be able to head back to Minnesota, which is where I'm from, and as well to my absolute all-time favorite park, because that's where I was inspired to become a naturalist by a legendary naturalist who I understand is still talking about nature, Ben Thoma, and that's Itasca State Park, the headwaters of the Mississippi River. And I'd like to welcome to the show Connie Cox, who's the naturalist at Itasca State Park. Connie, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Well, thank you very much for having me on today.
Well, it's good to hear a little bit of Minnesotanese in your voice. I'm certainly familiar with Itasca State Park. It's a wonderful park, so you get a chance to go out every day and find out what's going on, and this time of the year things are really changing quickly in Minnesota. Talk about what's coming up.
Oh, yes. Right now, exploring Itasca is a wonderful time of year because spring is just arriving in our area. Just yesterday, the ice finally melted off of the surface of Lake Itasca, and with that, the array of waterfowl that have returned to the open water, it's wonderful, again, to hear the common loon, which is our state bird, as it yodels across the lake and setting up its nesting territory. Bald eagles and the osprey have returned, hunting the open water for fish and setting up their nesting areas. And the other wonderful thing is the buds are now starting to swell on all of the trees. For example, the aspens, their flowers are extending, and the catkins are elongating, and we're just starting to get a flush of green in different parts of the woods. So after a long winter of just seeing what we say is brown or white or gray, it's wonderful to be getting the color of flowers coming back and of the waterfowl, the birds, and just seeing other animal activity as spring is finally coming to the northern parts of the state.
Now, Itasca is known for Lake Itasca, which is the headwaters of the Mississippi. And go ahead and give me that number. How many miles is it from the headwaters down to the Gulf?
All right. Itasca is the starting place for the mighty Mississippi River, and the river itself will journey about 2,450 miles to the Gulf of Mexico. However, that number changes every year or two or three as we have different flooding. So on our historic post at the headwaters, it says 2,552, and it measured that at one time, but it can change. And it's a wonderful spot for people to come out and visit and see this mighty river.
It's been a long time since I've been to Itasca. When I was there, pretty much there were just some rocks across the river. How is that crossing now? It's pretty much the same?
It's pretty much the same. That's the beauty of Itasca State Park. The park itself is over 32,000 acres in size. It was created, just to let the visitors know, that it was created in 1891. And at that time, very little development had occurred in Itasca. And so when people visit today, they're still seeing a pristine forest that was not really changed by homesteading. There had been some logging in the park, in small parts of it, but visitors can come and see big virgin pine stands, old growth timber. They can also come and walk across the headwaters of the Mississippi, where it's just a small, narrow river. It usually is no deeper than mid-shin deep. And that's like the river when Henry Rowe Schoolcraft discovered it in 1832. It still looks the same.
You also are blessed with a gorgeous lodge. I just have these recollections of the grand timbers and the deep-colored woods. Tell us about the Itasca Lodge.
Oh, that's a wonderful thing about Itasca as well, as we do have the historic Douglas Lodge. It was constructed in 1905, so we celebrated our centennial on the lodge just a few years ago, and people can come and visit. They can have stay in one of the rooms at the lodge, and it has some of the original furnishings that have been meticulously restored, There's a full-service restaurant in the lodge as well, so you could have breakfast, lunch, or dinner in the dining room, and some of the rooms face out over Lake Itasca, and it's just a wonderful experience. And being up in the north woods of Minnesota, oftentimes you don't even need to use the air conditioning because the natural cooling of Lake Itasca, just it's a wonderful retreat from the heat of summer. And as well as the lodge, there are numerous log cabins along the lakeshore as well that were constructed in the 1920s and 1930s. And people can just come and experience a historic feeling, kind of stepping back in time and stepping away from the race of today and experience what relaxation was like for many people, you know, 75 years ago.
A lot of people are talking about global warming and climate change, and some people are suggesting that the seasons seem to be changing, the spring coming on earlier or later, depending on where you are. And how has your spring been so far in terms of its historical record?
This particular spring has been more normal in the sense of it's been a long, cool spring. We actually just had snow. We had about 4 inches of snow a week and a half ago, and you could still go ice fishing on Lake Itasca. However, at this time of year, we do tend to get a lot of spring rains and some warm days with wind, and that did open the lake up a little more on the normal time schedule. But through Itasca's history, people have been recording when the ice would freeze over and cover up Lake Itasca, as well as when it would go out, or what we call ice out, when it would finally melt. And we have noticed a slight change in that the lake is freezing over a little later in the fall, and that sometimes it will open up possibly a week earlier than historic records. And so there is some recording of example, the ice forming on the lake, but right now, this particular year, we are following a normal spring pattern.
Now, for you as a naturalist, I know there's a wealth of animal life. It really does come alive. It's so happy to see the warmer days. Any stories this year that have stood out for you in terms of what some of those creatures are doing?
I just spoke with some people who were out walking one of our trails, and a fisher went running past them. A lot of the wildlife is very active now as they're establishing either their breeding territory or as they are raising their young. And, for example, our wolf pack has become very quiet in the park because now is the time that they would be having their young. But now is also a fun time because, for example, the bigger mammals such as the black bear are starting to come out of their dens. And with that, as the sows come out with their cubs, we get to start seeing that newness of life as we see the young cubs, as we see some of the other animals as they're bringing their young out as well. So just a lot of different stories with people talking about the antics of the bald eagles as they're setting up their nesting territory, and just the increase in bird songs as they also establish their territory. There's just not one story you can tell because, as you said, Itasca just has an incredible array of wildlife, and it's just too hard to pick one wonderful story.
That's one thing I missed that I think is unique about that area. It's a healthy environment there. A lot of these forests have been pretty much protected and left intact, and therefore the populations and the mix of the creatures is very, very diverse and healthy. Give us a little kind of an overview of some of the creatures that people might see on a walk through the woods at this time of the year.
Yeah, Itasca actually is very wonderful, like you mentioned, the diversity because of the rather undeveloped landscape that we have. But Itasca is also very interesting because we're on the confluence of three biomes. We're very close to the prairie biome, the hardwood belt, and also the conifer system. And so visitors coming out right now, especially in spring with the animal activity, you can see black-backed woodpeckers, which this is their southern region in Minnesota. You can see those birds being active, but oftentimes you can see indigo buntings and some other bird activity that's more typical of on a prairie or hardwood system. We also have even just our spring flowers that come up. We have some of our spring flowers that are very typical found in a conifer boreal system, but then in some areas of the park we're noticing our spring flowers that are more prairie or hardwood based flowers. So it's again, and because of that undisturbed landscape, we get to enjoy a lot of that, as well as springtime is a wonderful time to start looking for the ferns as they begin coming out in what we call the fiddlehead stage, and everybody's always anxious to see that. And, for example, the goblin fern, which is a very rare fern in Minnesota, which we do have coming up within Itasca. And so every year people are out trying to track down their favorite flower to photograph or to look at.
You mentioned also something that not many parks can boast, and that is you talk about your wolf population.
The pack that we have within Itasca is one that they have been studying since the 1980s, with the wolf being put on the endangered species list and its protection. We have seen over the last 25 years the expansion of the wolf population, that now within Itasca, this pack, which is about 7 members in the pack, they have been there for over 20 years working that area. But we're also noticing wolf packs that are forming beyond the boundaries of Itasca. And for those who may have traveled Minnesota, there is even a wolf pack as far as Little Falls, which is farther down on the Mississippi River in about the central part of the state. And that one resides at Camp Ripley. And so the wolf population has been expanding, and there's maybe different reasons for that, with more people planting forest land as they change over from agricultural land, and also just some of the public awareness of the wolf and the appreciation that people do have for the wolf, especially in Minnesota. A lot of people enjoy that because to us it's a symbol of that pristine wilderness of which we are proud of within our land here in Minnesota.
Have you had a chance to hear your local wolf pack?
Yes, I have. It's a wonderful experience. If you want to, it's hard to explain. It's hard to describe. But when you hear one calling, if it's an adult and it vibrates inside your chest cavity, and it causes you to get goosebumps on your goosebumps because you realize this animal, the representation of this animal that has been here for thousands of years. And it's also fun if in the late summer you can hear the young wolf pups as they're learning to howl. I kind of say they sound like prepubescent teenagers. As our voices crack when we're hitting puberty, that's what the young wolf pups sound like as they're trying to learn to howl like an adult. It's just a wonderful experience, and nothing can beat when you actually get to see one as it's traveling, which, again, a person has to go out into those more remote areas, and sometimes you are given the opportunity to enjoy seeing one.
Well, Connie, you're an extremely lucky person to be up at Itasca as the naturalist there. Don't ever give that up unless there's no alternative. I want to thank Connie Cox, who's the interpretive naturalist at Itasca State Park, for bringing us up to date on what's happening in one of the nation's finest state parks. Connie, thanks so much.
Well, thank you, Sydney, and you have a wonderful day, and I hope you can come back out and visit us at Itasca real soon.
While we're in the North Country, we now head a bit west and close up to the border of Canada as we explore the March of Spring into North Dakota. We now continue our discussion and exploration of what's happening in our state parks across the United States. And now we take off and head into the North Country, up into North Dakota, to Icelandic State Park. Joining us now is Dennis Clark. Dennis, welcome to the Wildside News.
Thank you.
First of all, Dennis, what's your role at the park?
My title is park ranger. I'm actually serving the role of an assistant park manager.
How long have you been in this position?
Actually, 2 years, although I did work here in the early 90s for about 3 years in the same position.
Is your background in parks, and you find yourself at this park, or is this a new career for you?
Actually, I kind of got into parks through the back door. I taught school for a number of years and started working in parks in the summers and worked into a second career.
Well, I'm sure everybody's wondering, why is the park named Icelandic State
that's
Park?
That's a good question. It's called that because in this particular part of North Dakota, a lot of Icelandic people settled here, and part of the park property was donated to the state of North Dakota by an Icelandic family. It includes North Dakota's first state nature preserve, and a homestead, a home and barn are still on the site.
So did they come to this area because it resembled conditions back in Iceland? Do you know the history?
That is somewhat true, yes. They passed up some of the most fertile farmland in North Dakota and ended up in a little more hilly country, and it probably did remind them a little bit more of what they were used to.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of some of my ancestors. I'm of at least partially Norwegian Scandinavian background, and they settled in Minnesota. It was one of the coldest places, along with North Dakota, Continental 48. First of all, why don't you give us a little overview of your park? Tell me what, when you look out, what are you looking at?
Well, we're along the Tongue River, which is a small river in North Dakota, and the park consists of that natural area with a nature preserve, and there's hiking trails down in a wooded river bottom forest environment. We also have a man-made lake that is the other feature of the park where our campgrounds are located. There's some natural forest in the campground, and a lot of trees have been planted in the campground. Pines and evergreens grow well here. We have a really sandy soil, so kind of a mixture, and it's a beautiful park and a beautiful area.
How big is the park?
A little under 1,000 acres.
My quest today is to find out, to get a sense of what's happening across the nation as spring launches here. What are you noticing in terms of birds, the flowers, whatever it is that's happening in Icelandic State Park?
I was just out here a little while ago and noticed we have kind of an early flower, a sign of spring in North Dakota in this part of the state. That would be the crocus or pasque flower. And we do some controlled burns in the park for improving the native grasses, and you can see those really well in those areas. And, of course, there's quite a few birds are back. A lot of our summer birds, are gradually returning. I've seen birds like flickers and meadowlarks, and have some juncos and finches at my feeder. But and there are some water birds, some ducks and so forth, returning. Great blue herons are here.
Now, some people, of course, are suggesting that the climate seems to be changing, the weather patterns are changing. How has your spring been in relationship to previous springs?
Well, in February, we would have had a hard time convincing us, probably, of global warming.
Yeah.
We had a really bitter cold stretch in February, and I would say our spring was, a little bit later in some respects, maybe partially due to that, but with the last couple of weeks, we've been having beautiful, nice weather, so it feels and looks like spring.
Give me a little description of the kind of the mix between open lands and then forested zones.
We're kind of a little bit similar to northwestern Minnesota. There are some kind of open areas and right in this area, and then there are some aspen forest lands, and so it's kind of a mixture. Right where the park is located, if you're traveling the highway, you would go through a fairly forested area, and then it starts to open up again. We're near the shoreline of the glacial Lake Agassiz, and when you go up that escarpment, that's heavily forested, and then you open up to the west on more open prairie land.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of the native wildlife, do you see any sort of evidence of spring?
The white-tailed deer is very high in North Dakota in recent years, and in the winter they tend to bunch up, and now they've been dispersing, so you don't see those large groups typically of deer that you see in the wintertime. So it's, and of course the Canadian geese are back and things like that. So.
Now, in terms of the park itself, how do they recreate there?
The main focus of our park would be, especially in the summertime, would be weekend campers, and the lake is a big focus. We have a nice sandy swimming beach and boating on the lake, and fishing to some extent, but a lot of water recreation and then camping. We have a number of weekends when our campground is full. We have over 160 campsites, and the camping here is a lot of repeat customers, a lot of camp with your friends and sit around the campfire at night and enjoy good company and that type of thing.
That's one of the great things about the state parks is that it very often really serves the local community. So I imagine that the bulk of your campers there are from the region there.
That's very typical, yes. We have the bulk probably from maybe 60 to 100-mile radius. We happen to be fairly close to the Canadian border, so about 40% of our campers are Canadians throughout the summer.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you have a website where people can learn more about the park?
Yes, we do. Our website is www.parkrec, that's parkrec.nd.gov.
Yeah, you've been there for a couple of years. What is your favorite aspect of Icelandic State Park?
You know, there's so many aspects of all of our state parks that just vary a little bit. The nature preserve in particular has some fens and really moist areas, some springs and seats and things like that. So it is, it's a totally different environment. So that's very enjoyable. And then just the amount of trees in the area, a lot of North Dakota doesn't have the forested areas, so that gives it a nice aspect. The natural forest would be more oak, ash, American elm, which have kind of died off from disease, aspen, a little bit of birch, box elder, green ash.
So it's very much a deciduous forest. I was kind of imagining a pine zone, but I was trying to figure that out. So
yeah, that would be the difference from most of, I guess I compared us to northern Minnesota, that where the pines are, you know, grow naturally. Here it's more of a deciduous forest.
Totally different zone then, yeah. So you've got yourself a beautiful wood. So therefore, I imagine there's quite a display of undergrowth, wildflowers and things that are bursting out about now.
Pretty much poised to start out.
Poised to start out, yeah. I have to remember, you're way up there.
Yeah.
I know that when I was in Minnesota, if you knocked me out for a month or so and dropped me in the middle of one of the parks there, I could tell you almost to the week what week it was, because the flowers came in this wonderful succession, and you'd look around, you'd find the mix, and you'd pretty much know, what time of the year it was there. If people want to find the park, give them some landmarks, some routes that can get them there.
Most people probably... if they're looking at the interstate highway system, I-29 is on the eastern edge of North Dakota, runs north and south, and we're west of I-29 on Highway 5, and more closely 5 miles west of the town of Cavalier, North Dakota.
What's your largest big city?
We're about 80 miles from Grand Forks, North Dakota.
That's sacred country up there.
Yeah.
We want to thank Dennis Clark. He's the park ranger at Icelandic State Park in North Dakota. Dennis, thanks so much for adding your voice here on the Wild Side News.
You bet. Thank you. You have a good day.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie.
I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool black skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave.
A shrinking glacier.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.